Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Joel, I'm not even quite sure where to begin. This was one of the most newsworthy, eventful, refresh button hitting, hope inspiring episodes of Dynamite that I can recall. And I there could be some people who might disagree with a thing or two that happened on the show, but if you're going to debut a new logo, and you want to continue momentum coming off of a critically acclaimed pay-per-view, this is the type of episode to do it. I said after the first segment, I felt like there was a new booker. And I don't mean that's either a compliment or an insult to Tony Khan, depending on how you'd want to take that. But this felt like a show we'll remember. Joel, your opening thoughts.
I mean, absolutely, Wade. I mean, I was just telling you immediately when you called, I'm like, I'm so excited to be able to talk about this show with you because, you know, after us talking about Dynamite for a number of years now, this was such an effective show in just it's hard to find the words to describe it because it was so many of these things to just give it, it's to say it's just a fresh coat of paint and a reset just feels like such an understatement at this point. Yeah. Because it's getting back to the core of what makes professional wrestling really exciting, what made AEW really exciting, where they did not just – the show was not just filled with a bunch of really good matches where, you know, the outcomes are, you know, somewhat meaningless, just kind of leading up to another match, you know, with wins and losses, just don't have the effect that they're supposed to. This was a show where – it was about really establishing these characters, the character arcs, getting these storylines that you're invested in. I mean, coming out of the show, there's a number of storylines that I am interested to see. Just follow along, see where it goes and what the landing point is for so many of these things. Now, there is going to be a number of things, you know, I'm sure with Tony Khan's booking that it's still, you know, it's not a totally different person with this, but just getting back to that core competency of, you know, with Swerve Strickland and the World Championship being in the opening segment, that instead of for so many times that we've seen somebody challenging for the championship, the fans are saying, well, hopefully they get the championship this time, or, you know, who knows when we're going to see them again or where they're going to land back on the card, you know, i.e. Jay White. But, you know, Swerve Strickland is putting his mission statement out there, and it's a story that you can follow and that you're excited to see. The stuff with Okada, which, you know, I don't even know if that's the top story coming out of the show. And I'm just so interested to see what are the next steps with him. How is this going to play out with the Bucks? What's going on with Bryan Danielson coming out to Will Ospreay? You know, there's so many different outcomes and things to be interested in with this show that, you know, I'm really hooked in so much more of the storylines and the potential character arcs and where things are headed with this, more so than just, hey, we got a few good matches on this show.
Totally agree. Although I do think Okada is the biggest story of the show. I'd be interested how much he would run away with that if we ran a poll. I mean, I get what you're saying about a lot of other intriguing things happening. This was a show that had a handful of other things that would have been alone the biggest thing on a typical Dynamite. But Okada coming out, I mean, we knew he was, you know, going to show up, but, you know, we didn't know how. So we didn't know under what circumstances. And boy, we didn't know what circumstances. The Young Bucks come out and they clean house. They, you know, Matt painfully announces, very difficult to say, that they have to be objective in good EVPs. They suspended Hangman Page without pay from the Elite, and then a little less reluctantly announced that they don't know where Kenny Omega is. Excalibur interjected. He's been sick. So because he's been absent and not communicating with them, they fired him for the Elite, right? They didn't just suspend him.
They fired him from the Elite.
Yeah, they fired him. Yeah. So they're just clearing the Elite, and then they kind of, I think half tease they've had something else to say. But then Okada or Eddie Kingston comes out, and then Okada comes out seemingly to his aid, and then Okada attacks Kingston, and you know the crowd goes silent. And I think that's again, this is one of the things where I just want to run a poll and kind of get a pulse of things, but some people are going to be disappointed. I love it. I think the Bucks are as relevant as they've been since the very early stages where it was like, you know, what are they going to be like on a national TV show on a weekly basis? And they have great matches and think about all their great tag matches they can have. I think they're enjoying this role. I think they're finding their groove. And I said at the beginning, it wasn't smooth at the beginning, but I wanted to see it through, and I would rather have them try and need a few reps to get it down, and I think that's what's happening. It's not going to be for everybody, but this was their best performance yet. I still think they have a ways to go, by the way. You know, I think there's still room for this act to get better as opposed to, oh, God, it's an eye roll, and they're just trying to mitigate the negatives. No, this is only a chance to grow into something good or even better than good. But Okada with them, it sets – one thing, it doesn't knock Swerve down a notch on the babyface chart. Like, just think of it that way. If you wanted Okada as a babyface, now Swerve has breathing space to stay a top-tier babyface. It doesn't move Moxley down. If Danielson takes on the right role, we'll talk about that. It doesn't move him down. And it creates no controversy that Will Ospreay is the lead babyface.
Yes.
It's his for the taking. I mean, he might already be, but it's his for the taking. So I like it, and I liked Okada's body language and facial expressions. I mean, we've seen it before that this is in him, and I just think, yeah, there's a lot. There's just a lot to like here. So, Joe, grab on any of that and comment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just excited about this show, Wade. That you're definitely right. That you know, Okada is probably the biggest story coming out of this. But yeah. I mean, I was at Revolution this past Sunday, and it just really occurred to me, you know, and it's easy to say now in hindsight, but I was just thinking about, you know, is Okada going to be on this show? I'm like, there's so many positive things happening on the show. It's probably, you know, it probably just wouldn't have the impact that it would have if he had debuted on Sunday, and thinking that it's probably better if they wait for him to come on Dynamite. But then I'm also thinking, I'm like, man, they have so many other baby faces that they really just need to run with. I mean, Darby Allin, just kind of his story of what's next after Sting. He's going to be climbing Mount Everest and, you know, coming back from that whole journey of things.
Yeah. Oh,
Strickland, you know, I mean, there's just so many other guys now that they can, where it's very clear, you know, who AEW needs to be running with. I mean, we talked about some of the pillars before, or AEW, you know, promoted their pillars of, you know, MJF and Sammy Guevara, Darby Allin.
Who?
I know. I mean, that. I really enjoy a lot of things about MJF, but at this point in time, there's a lot of really exciting things happening. And that's
good riddance.
No.
I'm laying it out there. MJF is amazingly talented. He was like,
for sure.
He was driving a car without a steering wheel the last couple of years, and I'm glad. And I mean, I just think AEW's better off without him right now.
As you said,
it was, you know, even MJF said, you know, there's whatever phrase was, there's burnout
from MJF's his character. Fatigue. Yeah,
and he needs to step back and just regroup. So, I mean, if he gets introduced into this new scene, great. He won't have as much of a burden to carry as a centerpiece top guy, and he's got competition that is going to be tough to leapfrog to become a top guy again in AEW. But I mean, an inspired, focused MJF can do it, and I hope he does it because everyone else is shining too, and he just gets that much better. But I say that for effect. I mean, like, this is not a company right now where, let's put it this way, if MJF said, let's revisit my contract negotiations, and I don't know what to believe as far as all that goes, but if MJF said, let's revisit my contract negotiations like in April, well, his price went down. He has no leverage after Sunday and Wednesday. Sunday and night. And if Tony Khan said, let's revisit in April, he is savvy. I say that for effect, not because there's any you know, reality to that. Okay. Let's just pause and hear and catch our breath and introduce the show formally. Let people know who are listening, how they can call and email. And then, Joel, you and I will cover more of the things we already touched on and other things, too. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Wednesday, March 6th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter. I've been covering professional wrestling for over 3 decades, documenting wrestling with contemporaneous reporting on some of pro wrestling's biggest happenings, including being front row and center for Sting in Baltimore, winning WCW title for the first time in 1990, and it was a real full-circle moment seeing what happened to him on Sunday night. Joel, it's cool that you got to be there for it. I wrote about it in a pretty lengthy roundtable review just for VIP members. I did a write-up on the pay-per-view with my kind of a day or two after having a couple days to reflect on the event, review of it as part of the long roundtable article with Sean Radican and Greg Parks and Rich Fan and Alan Cunahan, all rating the show, scoring the show on a 1-10 scale and reviewing it too. So go VIP. If you're a VIP member, log into the VIP site and read over that. But got to write about, you know, Sting's journey and my framing of his career and how it ended. But yeah, so anyway, my point is I've been covering this business for a long time. And when you become a VIP member, you get to read my reports going back to the late 1980s, including my coverage and all the buildup to all the excitement around Sting at that time, unseating Ric Flair and seeming like he'd be the wrestler of the 90s. And I also operate and helm the PWTorch.com website. We launched that back in 1999. It's got some great articles from a wide array of perspectives and writers. Hope you're checking it out every day. We've also got breaking news, live TV and pay-per-view and PLE coverage, flashback articles and polls and more. PWTorch.com. Check it out if you haven't been. And I also host a variety of podcasts, including the post shows after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and sometimes Collision, and also some VIP exclusive shows like Everything with Rich and Wade yesterday, about an hour and a half of talk about a lot of things going on both in AEW and WWE, including everything going on with The Rock. So go VIP. Don't miss out on everything we offer, including an ad-free environment, both on the website and with all the podcasts. The VIP shows never have ads, and the free shows on the VIP feed have the ad breaks removed. So it's a real streamlined listening experience. PWTorch.com/goVIP gives you information on how to sign up through Patreon, through your Apple account on your iPhone with a single click. It's as frictionless as it gets. Or you can get the full VIP membership with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. Again, full details, PWTorch.com/goVIP. But we're here to talk Dynamite, and the other voice you hear on the show is Joel Dunnell, a PW Torch contributor, a frequent co-host here, especially on the Dynamite post show, and the host of his own weekly dedicated show focused on AEW, The Conversation Club. Joel, welcome back. What good timing that you're available for this week's show.
I just feel so fortunate that I get to be on for this week. I mean, this is fantastic to get the instant, you know, reaction right after watching the show and to be able to talk with you about Wade. This is a treat.
By the way, take a second just to plug your show. It's on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. It's another feed just like this red logo feed, the Wade Keller Post Show. It's free. It's part of the Torch lineup. Just search PW Torch. Subscribe. There's a different show every day of the week with different specific focuses and themes. And I encourage you to check it out. If you're not a VIP member, you can subscribe to it for free. If you are a VIP member, they're included on the VIP feed with the ads and plugs removed. But Joel, just talk about what you guys do.
Yeah, so I host the All Elite Conversation Club podcast alongside my co-host, Greg Kanner. We have a great time dissecting all of the news with AEW. We go pretty in-depth talking about Dynamite. So even though on some shows there's some quick hits on it, we try to go pretty in-depth and give our thoughts as to you know, what we thought about those segments, where things are headed. And I'm very excited to be talking about this week, as Wade had mentioned, and I talked about that. I was at Revolution this past Sunday. I did the trip to Greensboro. I have some good stories to talk about that. Ran into a number of wrestlers at the airport, was on the plane with Chris Jericho, and some other things that happened there. So I am very excited to have that conversation with Greg. This coming Friday morning is when we record those. I'll be talking about that experience and more on this episode of Dynamite and the things for AEW to come.
So you're saving some stuff for your show, and I think that's great because we got so much to talk about regarding Dynamite tonight.
I will answer any questions you have for it,
though. Fair enough. I'm all for, you know, teasing a couple things so people listen to you and Greg on later this week. I'm looking at ProWrestling.net. They got a pull up right away asking people to grade the show, A, B, C, D, F. And so is it great or good, average, disappointing, or awful? And it is 80% thumbs up and it's 60% great, 20% good. I actually thought it would be even more positive than that. To only have 6 out of 10 people call it a great show, because I think it was a great episode of Dynamite. 9% are called it average, and then there's like 9% whoever they are giving a thumbs down. Let's hear from you if you're one of those people. take your case.
We can find them on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. They're WWE. They're haters who don't watch the show. There, I use the term hater. I don't like the term hater. I think it diminishes the power and meaning behind the word hate when you're just using it to describe people who dare to criticize public figures. But nevertheless, I just used it. I'm such a hypocrite.
They're trolls.
What's that?
They're just trolls.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, you're invited to give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email the show right now at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Please note it's at Gmail, our new email for the show. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you don't listen to the live stream of the show, you can still email the show and be part of it. So that's a good way to send your thoughts, your questions, your comments, even if you can't listen live or participate by being a caller. To find the live stream every Wednesday night and also every Monday and Friday nights, wadekellerpostshow.com. That's easy to remember. And then just navigate to the live stream. Or even better, get the direct link to that night's show at pwtorch.com in my TV report on Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, or Collision. And you'll know if we're doing the show, the live post show after Collision, by checking it at pwtorch.com. My schedule doesn't always allow for me to cover it live on Saturday nights, and sometimes the show just isn't really worth a live show, a live post show lately, unfortunately. But hopefully that changes. Anyway, let's pivot to more conversation and calls and emails. And we'll actually begin with Larry from Beardstown, Illinois, your first caller. Larry, welcome. I'm curious to hear what you thought of tonight's show.
I thought overall, first, thanks for taking my call, as always. And I thought it was a fairly solid show. It was had a fairly good flow the entire show. My first question, this may seem a little bit of an unusual question, but did you notice that Taz was acting a lot more heelish in his commentary than usual tonight?
I didn't. There was the issue with Stokely and Statlander. What else stood out to you? Refresh my memory, Larry.
Oh, I think that was most of it for me. He generally wasn't being that pointed towards some things. There were a couple of comments he made during the Osprey match as well.
Okay. Joel, did you pick up on that?
Yeah, I mean, of all the things happening on the show, I mean, that's not one of the things that stood out to me, but that's an interesting observation to kind of check back on this and look for some of that in the coming shows.
Yeah, I'm not sure if, I mean, obviously, Tony Khan was talking last week in the media Q&A that they had a late night last Wednesday night, and he talked about all the people gathered in the room with them, and they were excited about Sunday, but obviously, there's some fresh voices, and maybe, your live the total viewership is down like roughly 10% this year for Dynamite in the first 9 weeks compared to a year ago. They're holding up better in the demo ratings. So, some of this is just a drop in overall cable viewership. But NXT is up, compared to a year ago over the same 9 weeks. So it's not like it's inevitable that as people drop cable, viewership goes down. NXT is actually up over a year ago, even though they're way down from where they were when WWE was sneaky and loading the show up with stars while they were negotiating for a TV deal. I don't like that excuse always being used. I just think there's a sense of excitement. Look who we're signing, and whoever shows up next week. I don't want to spoil it for anybody about next week in Boston. I'm total tongue in cheek. But with Osprey
who's debuting
and Okada, somebody with a Boston connection. I mean, the rumor is it might be John Cena, but I don't want to spoil anything. Who else could it be? Yeah. So I just think they're excited. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't just, you know, have a new colorful logo. I love all the people who were – this is so petty, but all the people who were critical of the NXT logo saying it looked like Nickelodeon when it was, like, the cool color – the cool, like, street color scheme of a lot of things going on in pop culture. And, you know, there's a bunch of people younger than me but still old, you know, older than the trendsetters in their 20s who were all over it. Maybe you were one of them, Joel. I don't know. And now AEW's basically adopted it. They're like, we're going to go with that cool urban multicolor theme for Dynamite. I like the look. I like the new set. Mm-hmm. You know, the tunnel thing. I don't know. Which tunnel did Danielson come out of? Is there a heel and face tunnel? I didn't even have a chance to pay attention to
that. I think he came out of the left tunnel, but I wasn't paying attention if it, yeah. You know, what it was. But I just liked that the show just felt like it had a lot more texture to it.
Oh.
You know, it's not the
yeah.
it's not the sleek all LED screen where I just feel like wrestling is – it's like – you know, you look at the title
gritty.
Belts and there's all, it's gritty. There's texture to it where you can feel it. It's the whole sense of it. And I just felt like that show just, the show overall just really got back to that.
Yeah. I mean, I have more to say about the show, but I don't want to trail off too mm-hmm. far from Larry's original point.
Yep.
Larry, I want to throw it back to you and wind back to what you want to talk about.
Okay. I noticed something. I think you may have noticed it in the, live coverage on the Torch website, and when Darby said that he might not be coming back from Mount Everest, I think that's what the kids call a shoot, because I checked and almost 20 people in the last year had passed away trying to climb Mount Everest. So,
yeah
Darby is not joking.
No, 330 people, more than 330 people have died. I Googled it too. I didn't know how common it was. I don't know what percent 20 is. I don't know if that's out of, you know, 20,000 people trying or 20 out of 40 people die. So yeah, Darby, geez. God. I mean
is he going to do a coffin drop off the top?
I don't give him ideas. I know. Yeah.
I'm like, don't put it past him.
I don't think, yeah, just if he makes it to the top, I don't even know. I just, he, there was a lot of emotion there. I mean, it wasn't just staying. I think he knows he's taking on a real
yeah.
big challenge. I know some people, you know, it's worth the risk, and that's what they are on this planet hardwired to try. And he's one of them, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, literally, next week could be his last match. I don't know what percentage it is, but it's a non-zero chance that he is done after next week. And it's crazy to just sit here and talk about this almost flippantly, but obviously he brought it up and it's real. Anyway, yeah. That was a remarkable segment overall. Jay White shined. There's so many aspects of the show on a granular level. It was so professionally, meticulously created, executed. I mean, you know, I used to say, you know, wrestling show could just get by with somebody writing matches down on the back of a note card and let the wrestlers do their thing. And I think there was a generation that could have done that, you know, territory wrestlers who just, you know, came up with their own characters and refined them through reps and went from one territory to another. We found out the last few years that's not the case. You can't just point a camera at the ring, write down some matches and promos, and have a show that can compete with WWE or sustain viewership. It needs this level of detail. It didn't feel like a scripted show, but it felt like a show where everybody had spent a lot of time thinking what they're going to say and how they were going to say it as effectively as possible with a purpose in mind as part of a larger story. For people who just think Dynamite's been great and grand all along, you know, they're not going to appreciate, they're not going to necessarily have the same feelings that I did watching the show, but I really appreciate and notice this felt like a show where they put a ton of time into every segment and didn't take anything for granted, didn't coast. I've talked about how Paul Heyman's talked about how he and the Bloodline and Roman Reigns they're texting each other constantly with ideas throughout the week. And then they show up, they spend hours like going over like two backstage skits and an in-ring promo and they bounce ideas off each other and they refine it. And they're not the only ones doing it. I just bring it up because Paul talked openly about it. But that's what goes on in WWE. And it doesn't mean under Vince's vision, especially, it always turned out great. But that effort is there. The announcers are prepped on here's the point we want to make with this segment. So don't, you know, except for Pat McAfee. So don't derail it, you know, and let's stay focused. Here's what we're going for. And all that was present tonight. And if this is what they can sustain this, they're they're going to have a really good year, and they are going to grow, not just because they signed some big names, but because of what they're doing with some of their existing talent, too, and Jay White was one of them. Larry, sorry for just talking about – I have so much to talk about. You happen to be on the line with us while I still think of things, but go ahead with anything else you want to say.
Well, I get it. There were a lot of things happening with the show, and it did have a different feel than some other Dynamites have had, particularly in probably the last 3 or 4 months. And the points you made were really good. I mean, it's good to have the script, but it's also good to have the ideas flowing, so and allowing people to do things. But at the same time, it seemed like things flowed and it was more structured, and that's, to me, is a really good thing. But you mentioned territories, and I'm old enough to have been a fan of the territories, and I wanted to say that about the last 5 minutes or so of the Ospreay-Fletcher match, I know maybe they overdid it a little bit on the two counts, but for just that little bit of time there, for about that 5 minutes, the way the crowd was reacting, it was in the ballpark of the the NWA Crockett 1985-1986 shows, where the crowds were really getting into it. And, if you're watching it as a fan, I couldn't help but think, hey, this is nice. This can make people, not question, why am I watching this? They're dead as a doorknob. They're chanting boring. They're crapping all over everything. They're really getting into this, which might plant a seed that, hey, this is good stuff. Maybe they can do more. Maybe I want to watch, if that makes any sense to you.
Joel?
I mean, the level that Will Ospreay is wrestling at right now, I mean, the whole last year that he had, but just this year alone, we're only a week into the month of March, and this guy has had just a list of phenomenal matches. And putting him in this position where it seems to me that they're putting him as the top babyface, as they should, as many people said, and when they signed him, I mean, he is just going to elevate the game of everybody else on the roster, because he's going to go out there and give it 110% every time he's out there. He's never just going to get through the match, go through the motions. That everyone's game is just going to be so much more elevated on all levels, to reach that top spot. So it's – and to just have this guy who can – you're excited to see everybody get a chance to get in the ring with him as well. I mean, man, it's they're just hitting a new level right now with the talent they've acquired, but also just restructuring some people on the card. I mean, I've been advocating for a while with Kyle Fletcher, to move him up the card, have him be, somebody that you look at as a quote-unquote pillar, somebody who's up and coming there. And just to frame it on this first episode, the season premiere, as they're calling it, of Dynamite, to have these two guys in there, it's just like, wow, here's a really refreshing, here's two young, really good guys that is just going to be the statement for AEW moving forward.
Yeah, Kyle Fletcher, I was like an advocate for him just like winning the Continental Classic or that being a showcase for him, and they wanted to go different directions, and there might have been logistics, of course. But yeah, Kyle, someone to go with. But, I think with Ospreay lasting, 21? Fletcher lasted 21 minutes, I think the main event went. What a main event. I wish that Fletcher had more recently had good showings against top-level talent, just because for a part of the AEW audience, Ospreay's not fully defined yet. And if he, it's sort of like, going back to, Cody Rhodes going, 20 minutes with whoever it was early on. I can't remember who. And it was like, why is Cody taking 20 minutes to beat this guy? Like, you got to have top guys, and they got to beat lower people quicker. It's not just all about putting in minutes of great wrestling. You also want to make sure that people who should win quick enough to move to the next level. But if Fletcher gets pushed, and this is kind of not his coming out party, but like reaffirming how good he can be, then it's fine. I just don't want to see Fletcher, in a give and take match with a lower card guy and needing to cheat to win 2 weeks from now in Collision. Mm-hmm. Like, use Agreed. This match as a way to say, yeah. He's a notch below Ospreay, but not much, and he gave him a real big test.
And that's exactly what I got coming out of this match. But of course, yeah, it's going to be the follow-up, but I've been advocating for this whole Don Callis family. I mean, really can be the centerpiece of a lot of the storytelling and what a lot of the AEW product should be about. I mean, of course you still have the world title picture, what's going on with Samoa Joe. He's got some challengers lined up with Wardlow for next week, but seriously, I just feel that the people involved in the Don Callis family is like a preview of a lot of people I think they should be pushing at a really high level. They get a lot of credibility from being with Don.
Yeah, yeah. I should say all you want. One of the main things you want with AEW, you can't be too absolute with these phrases. But one of the key things I want is just whatever someone has to offer, put them in a position to offer that. Like, take advantage of what people's skills are. Feature, shine a spotlight on their strengths, hide their weaknesses, and then put them in situations to shine. And this was an episode that did that, you know? And, I mean, they could have so easily just said, Ospreay and Fletcher just had a great match. Thanks, everybody. Wow. We had a great match. Go tell your friends what a great show. But no, they end with this intrigue with Danielson and people wondering, you know, is Ospreay really going to be putting up with Callis and what's going on with that? Even on a lesser level, like, this was the best week of Stokely Hathaway. By subtraction, almost. Like, there was... He wasn't just cutting an indie-rific manager promo. Like, he scaled back what he was doing at ringside, on the microphone, with his body language. There's still, you know, some cartoon face. Well, it wasn't even cartoon face. He was emotive, but in a way that felt like dialed back and you know, less in the Sanjay Dutt territory and more in the J.J. Dillon territory.
Yeah.
And I like that. And just because you can be a goof doesn't mean you should. And I thought Willow gave her best promo to date, or certainly close to it. Chris Statlander, I thought, told her story with her body language and facial expressions well. So I'm just bringing that up because it's like, it's not just the top level stuff.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like they just, like, Tony didn't just say, and I know there's been some criticism, maybe Tony heard it, that, you know, guys are showing up, we don't know what we're doing until the last second, and the show is just amateur hour. And there's a lot of talented people on the AEW roster, but they need more guidance. They need more time. They need more walkthroughs. They need more, you know, every writers have editors for a reason. When, you know, you want to offer your writing for someone else to look over before you submit it to your boss or to the teacher or professor or whatever it is, for a reason. And AEW felt a lot like a first draft for years. This didn't. And I mean, Tony's proud of the show, and it paid off, you know, the extra work that was put into it. Anyway, Larry, back to you.
Well, one more thing, and you sort of touched on it there at the end, the dynamic now with Stokely and Willow and Statlander. Do you think, now that they've announced that there's a match between Willow and Rio coming up, do you think that something similar will happen at the end of that match, like that happened tonight with a possible interference? Do you think there's an outside chance that instead of, this may be a stretch this early, but instead of rejecting the help like Statlander did, Willow accepts it?
Yeah, see, that's what I like about this, is Statlander rejected it. Willow, her body language to me, and even her words, suggested in a subtle, not banging over the head way, that she might be more receptive to it. And I don't know if we thought going into this, Statlander would be the one to say no and stay babyface, and Willow would go heel, because Willow is so just, you know, I mean, her okay, it's like Sami Zayn's music personified, you know, like she's just this this like happy, cheerful, positive, exuding optimism and joy. And if she joins Stokely and starts cheating and turns heel, it's like, that's a good twist. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You look at some of the words that they use, and Stokely was talking. He said that Chris is his favorite, you know. And then Willow said that, you know, they're going to be doing things her way next week. And I love that she just talked about that. She wants to be the face of TBS, but she really does need to get through Rio, and she was not very confident about that. You know, leaving a little bit more intrigue, the subtlety of that, you know, versus, you know, I'm just going to give them my best fight and go out there. She was very unsure of herself, too. So that just leaves that door open to see how it plays out.
Do you like that if Willow is a heel, or would you rather they go with Statlander? Like, generically speaking, or just, like, stepping back, I would rather have Statlander be heel because I just don't think her personality as a babyface is smooth. She's awkward, and having Stokely talk for her just makes so much more sense. And Willow's such a natural babyface. So, like, I mean, if they go the other way, I'm going to second guess that decision, but I'm intrigued by the place we are in the story. You know, there's a possibility, too. Willow turns down the weapon, and Statlander decides she should have, you know, she should have last week, so she interferes on Willow's behalf or something, and so that's the heel turn. I mean, I'd say that it's just like there is a twist that could come up here where it's like they lead us one direction but go another.
Yeah, I mean, I very much fall the same, where it just seems more natural for Chris to be more in the heel position. But I'm intrigued to see, you know, if Willow does go heel, or what they do to play this out. It's just this is, you know, something that's not at the top level of the show, as you were mentioning. And it's a storyline that it was kind of, you know, what's really going on here? Stokely's kind of trying to turn them both heel, plant bad ideas in their head, but they like being around Stokely because he's kind of a fun, cartoonish guy. He kind of fits the vibe with them. And now it's added just so much more layers of depth to and more intrigue to see what the next steps are for this. And it's just amazing how quickly they can turn that around in a week like they did on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Larry, appreciate you kicking things off.
Hey, well, thanks as always for taking my call. Thanks for letting me know I wasn't the only person that kind of noticed how Willow spoke in the interview. And I think as strange as it sounds, either way they go with it in the future, I'm really curious about, because it's gone from the first couple times I saw the thing with Willow and Stat and Stokely from being, I don't know, this is just ridiculous, to now I kind of see, you know, I kind of want to know where it goes. I'm kind of entertained by it. And again, thanks for taking my call, guys, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, Larry. All right. Greg and Wilder was going to be next, but he flight himself. So we'll go to Grant in Detroit, who is now up. By the way, if you want to call us, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show, especially if you disagree with us. If you thought this was an average show, let us know why. Grant, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
What's going on, Wade? A long time no talk to.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Hope all is well.
So I missed the first half of the show, so I'm going to go back and check it out. But I've been meaning to call you because I know you were I think it might have been – it wasn't you and Todd Martin. It might have been when you was on the flagship and I can't what's that from ProWrestling.net?
Jason Powell.
I can't remember his name. Yeah, Jason Powell. Yeah, y'all were saying like that they had that, like, you know, they're getting ready to bring Mercedes in, and y'all don't feel like they prepared for it or built anybody. But I don't think that's true. Like, I've been watching the women's division, and it seems like they kind of been building contenders, like Serena Deeb on the winning streak. I think Thunder Rosa is on the winning streak. I think they did a pretty good job building up Deonna Purrazzo. Like, I mean, y'all just was talking about Statlander and Willow. Like, I think they're doing an okay job, like, getting the women's division a little bit more focused. And, of course, you know, you got Toni Storm. So I don't think y'all giving them enough credit for what they're doing with the women's division. I don't know. What you think?
I know the way the evidence you're using to build your case, but other than Toni Storm, there's not anyone who seems like a star on that list. And you can book a winning streak, but it doesn't mean that they have momentum and they feel like a star. And Sasha Banks is a star. She exudes charisma, confidence, star power. She's been under the bright lights on the big WWE shows. And that's what Jason and I are talking about. It's who is a mainstream fan's dream match. Not Serena Deeb, who had a couple vignettes and has been on a winning streak on shows people largely don't watch. And isn't every week you're just told this is a star. And WWE does that well. I mean, that's one of WWE's strengths, is if we're going to spend TV time on anyone, we're not going to let anyone forget that they exist, and we're going to do everything we can to make them into a star. And they don't treat everybody equally. You know, there's some who are top, and some are really heavily pushed, and then others are utility people to fill in between the big stars. But other than Toni Storm, I'm sorry, Thunder Rosa does not have momentum. Serena Deeb might have a cage match winning streak, but she doesn't have momentum as a star. Statlander has been has needed help on her presentation and hasn't been getting it. And now is part of, I should say, up until now, the storyline where she's actually has something to sink her teeth into, and that hasn't played itself out yet. But it is kind of a mid-card women's feud. It's, you know, Statlander, Willow, and Stokely. It's been on TV a lot, but it doesn't feel like, okay, both one or both of these two, they can just drop on pay-per-view against Mercedes, and it'll be like it'll be a match that people have been waiting for or salivating over. So that's a point. I just have a high standard for what Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, deserves to have when she steps into as a certainly highly paid acquisition. She should walk in and have dream matches and top-level pay-per-view matches waiting for her. And I think Toni Storm is the beginning and end of that list right now, and there's work to be done with everyone else, including the ones you mentioned. That's not to say there's not improvement in the women's division compared to where it's been at different times, but it's not at Mercedes Moné level in terms of what they're paying her and trying to you know, they're going to treat her as big of a star as CM Punk, and they should, because you want to get the most out of her. I wrote in my review of Revolution, when talking about reflecting on Sting's career, they called Sting an icon before he was an icon. Like, he wasn't objectively an icon. It was aspirational. And it's something promoters do. You know, I mean, it's fair game. But he grew into it. He earned it over time. And with Mercedes, they should treat her as level as CM Punk. And then it's up to her and them to, you know, live up to that framing of her. But they shouldn't settle for anything less. Joel, your thoughts on what Grant had to say and my response to it.
Yeah, I mean, wait, that was very well said on that, where I feel that there's the women's division has had a renewed push where they're trying to elevate people, but I mean, it's going to take a lot more.
I would throw her name.
I mean,
Julia,
yeah, absolutely.
If Mercedes comes in as a babyface, Julia Hart, granted, bring her up, but she's somebody who seems like maybe under Toni Storm, she's the next person. You're like, oh, I want to see her because she has gotten better and she has been, you know, produced well. Go ahead, Joel, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, Julia Hart is someone who has continued to improve, but she's not, you know, she's not at the same level. You know, she's not there yet. But, you know, when you talk about other people who are on, you know, winning streaks and stuff, like Thunder Rosa, you know, it's going to take a lot more than beating Lady Bird Monroe, Cassandra Golden. You know, I'm just pulling those because I'm looking at her last matches on here. That, you know, those are not building her into this next top star. I mean, of course, when Britt Baker comes back, you know, hopefully she can get back to a similar level that she was at before, and that could be a big match for Mercedes down the road. But you're going to have this big star coming in here, and like you said, outside of Toni Storm, who with that personality is kind of going to be, you know, a weird mix with Mercedes. You know, I'm curious to see how that goes because, you know, seeing this last program with Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo, I don't think it ended up in the way that AEW had hoped it would be. I think that they were hoping there'd be a lot more heat behind this, that this would really elevate Deonna and elevate Toni Storm. And I certainly being there live, I mean, that was with a lot of stuff going on in the show. That was one of the low points of it. So I just think that it's going to be a big moment for when Mercedes comes in. But certainly, as far as the matches that you look forward to, it's a very short list of big star making matches. And so how many, you know, does she have against these lower level people on the TV shows versus building to these big pay per views, which they've massively expanded that schedule. So they're going to need to have a lot of people ready for that.
All right, Grant, I had a lot to say. Joel, I have to say. Any response or anything you want to add or a different topic even?
I completely have forgot about Britt Baker's coming back and another match that I think will probably be good. Jamie Hayter versus her. Pretty good. Like,
but it's going to take some work to get her at Mercedes
I think
level.
It's the potential there. Yeah, you're right. Work, but it's going in the right direction. It's much better than where it was, I could say, a year ago.
Yeah, yeah. I think the trajectory is good, but I don't think that is – I don't think you're rebutting or undercutting the point Jason and I were making, which is, you know, you can have progress,
sure.
But still not be where you need to be. Yeah.
Yeah, it does need work for sure, and Mercedes is probably my favorite wrestler, like, period. So, trust me, I understand what you're saying, but I'm just saying I just think we're not giving them enough credit because it looked like they're trying to put the effort into turning the division around. So, that's all.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I have more confidence they can do it after, you know, Sunday and especially tonight's Dynamite that, you know, there might be some new voices and inspired and Tony and maybe, you know, he just, you know, people go through stuff where they can't put the time in or they're mentally drained or they're just sort of taking a deep breath before, you know, you see it with star players in Major League Sports. Sometimes they phone in a performance. And then, you know, they get away with it and then suddenly they're not getting away with it. And then they change their diet and they show up earlier and they stay later at the gym. They listen to the coach a little more. They ask teammates for feedback and suddenly they're a different player and bookers can go through that too. And you know, I don't have insight into if Tony just thinks he's been doing a great job and this is just the result of a continuation of great work. But, all indications are, you know, this was he saw this as a statement show and a new beginning to go along with the new logo. Cool. Grant, yeah, any final word? Yeah.
I didn't have nothing else. Like I said, I'm going to catch up on the rest of the show, and I'm going to start back trying to call you on a regular like I was.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks, Grant. Good to hear from you again.
All right.
I wish, Joel, I wish people, if they're never going to call us again, would, like, send an email going, by the way, I'm moving on. I didn't want you to wonder about me. You know, like, it's just weird, you know, when you listen back to old shows, you're like, whatever happened to, you know, like, we haven't heard from Kyle in Baltimore for a while. He was every week guy. Like, just let me know what's up. I want to know
Boris
you're okay.
From Chicago.
Well, he still calls other shows. He knows I don't want him to call my shows.
Okay.
I say that with love, but it's so true.
I did. Okay.
Like the last four times he called, I just, you know, kind of, I mean, it was years ago, but I just like, Boris, that's not a question, or Boris, that's not what we're talking about. I got exasperated.
So just a name I remember from, like, man, the early days of, like, the live cast, you know?
I think he called Greg's show Sunday night after Revolution.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like, you know, if you just check in, you know. I mean, you know, we talk to each other sometimes, you know, multiple times a month, and then you just ghost us. We want to know why. Where are you going? What's going on? Maybe they all climbed Mount Everest and didn't come back. Should I joke about that? I probably not.
Well, it is worth noting that, you know, more and more people have been able to climb Mount Everest. And from what I understand, there is a giant line at the top to get your picture taken up there. Like, seriously, there's a huge line to do that. And you only have like a second or so to be at the top of it.
Okay.
So it is possible. And more and more people have done it. Yeah.
Darby didn't say, I'm going to try to be the first person to jump out of an airplane without a parachute and survive. Like, it wasn't quite that much of a death wish.
Well, we might get there.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. If you can climb on an airplane, you'll be like, let's try jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. Do a coffin drop out of an airplane onto a trampoline.
Have a cameraman come with him and just see what he does.
Yeah. Boy, they had cameras everywhere backstage tonight for that brawl. Who was it that escaped in the truck? Christian. Copeland chased him. Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, I love that. Except it was like our camera people are doing a great job catching all the action because they were self conscious of the fact that every hallway had a camera set up to film live this impromptu brawl. It wasn't as egregious as when they clear all the fans away for a concourse brawl and then have the fake popcorn stand. But anyway, you can give us a call 347-215-8558 when you call push 1, and we'll bring you onto the show. We got some good emails to get to too, but we'll go to Greg in Waterloo. Next, Greg, welcome. What are your thoughts on Dynamite tonight?
Hello, and first of all, I'll just say that if I do drop off in the future, I'll try to let you know what's going on because I also have a pension for doing that. So I want to circle back to the I want to circle back to the big business conversation in a minute, but first I wanted to do some thoughts. I don't think I'm quite as bullish as you two might be coming out of the show, but I do see there's a lot of optimism. And I think that, you know, now that – what was that tweet earlier this year? 2024 is the new 2021, and I guess you can see why he why Tony Khan had that attitude. And I'll say there's a couple of positives. I do think that the new set is the reset is definitely gives a fresh feel to the show. And a couple of positive things I had coming out of it. I'm not sure how I feel about the whole Okada presentation. I'll have to give it time to decide
that's
on
fair.
That. But
yeah,
I
fair.
Noticed a couple things I noticed were that we've talked about letting things breathe a little more, and I feel like there was a little more of like just letting certain big events breathe, like the Okada debut. And then also there's been much more of like a mixing of one of the critiques is that AEW doesn't do enough to fill people in on what's going on, and there were more,
yes.
and maybe some people who were just like
yes.
wrestling purists might not like this as much, but there were more recaps, there were more video packages, there were more things to like let you feel like you could tune in and get filled in on what's going on, and that's been a critique a lot of people have had and still might have in the future, but for tonight I thought that it was there.
And it didn't bog down the show. Like, you don't counter my point by saying we don't need a 12-minute video at the top of a show recapping everything that happened at the pay-per-view. We don't need a 4-minute recap in the second hour to recap what happened in the first hour. That was never my argument. That's a straw man argument. This was a good – I'm glad you brought that up, Greg, because this was a good example of that where, Excalibur was kind of, holding people's hand in a way that didn't seem patronizing or didn't seem like he was just like, oh God, there's people out there who don't know as much as I do and I have to explain it to them. Just Google it. They actually like seemed eager to bring you along for the ride. Like in some of these things. And I thought the backstage interviews, the House of Black vignette with a follow-up interview. Like the Mark Briscoe was just, he's someone I want to see in exactly this role consistently. I mean, he's engaging, and I thought they used him right tonight. Yeah, so anyway, Joel, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the amount of underscoring they did of this pay-per-view to continue not just give you one big recap, like we've seen on other shows where it's the following episode that they just give you one video package, like you said. I mean, they gave you these very in-depth, recaps of this where Tony Khan was saying, this was one of the greatest shows ever done. And they made you feel like that. After the way that they just kept emphasizing it, the video packages to it, the people responding to it in the ring. So there was a lot of response to what had happened on Sunday, but also then laying down the foundation for what is next for the journey so that there was consequences to the outcomes of those matches. And then where do people go from here? And then also I really like that they had that video package talking about the Tag Team Championship Tournament. They have enough footage now showing, some different eras of AEW. So whenever they go back and show these different, you have different footage of that stuff, I think it always just makes things feel a lot more important when you can draw back upon that. But yeah, a lot of these other backstage segments that they had, especially with Kyle O'Reilly, saying that he had sunk all the way so far to the bottom, doesn't know what path he needs to take moving forward. I mean, just it had so many consequences from what happened on Sunday to where now you're interested to see what happens with these characters outside of just, some matches thrown onto Rampage and Collision.
Yes. Greg, back to you. I'm glad you brought that up. I might not have gotten around to it, but it was another aspect of this that I liked. Because I liked Mark Briscoe. I liked the Kyle O'Reilly interview. There were several others. It was just like, yes, we're getting to know these people. Their promo seems like thought was put into it on a granular level. It didn't feel scripted, but it felt thought through. And it didn't feel like it was maybe the first time they said some of the things they were saying. Some time was put into to practice. So, yeah, Greg, go ahead.
Yeah. And, people, I think, I talk the happy medium between what some people think is WWE, people you can argue about this and fault people's intelligence with the constant recaps and stuff. And I can understand why people feel that way. I don't quite feel that way because I do feel that recapping and emphasizing events is important, but a happy medium between maybe some of the things that irritate people more about like the way WWE goes about things and then not filling people in at all or not like emphasizing important events at all or telling people who might not be regular viewers not presenting the show in a way that they can get into the show. So, you know, there could be a happy medium established here to some level or another. I think that would be a positive. I think tonight was a good step in that direction. Then I have one more question before I do want to go back to the whole women's division conversation. But do either of you sense that there might already be and this isn't a negative, really, but do you think that there might already be a bit of an overexposure of Will Ospreay in ring? Because, like, I mean, in two matches, he's already done everything that just – I don't know what else he can do, like, as far as, like, between the Takeshita match and between the Kyle Fletcher match. He's absolutely incredible. Yeah. But, like, if people are expecting him to do matches like this every week without him, like, you know, him staying consistently healthy, I don't know what you're going to get. But, like, I mean, what do you think about, like, would be a good amount of, like, in-ring presentation for him as far as, like, how often he wrestles and how often he's in matches like that? Because you can't do that every single week, I don't think. Two, three times a week.
Yeah, I've thought on that, but I want to get Joel's take first. Joel.
Well, Ospreay's going to prove you wrong, and he's going to keep taking it to the next level, and he's proven that he can keep doing this. However, I mean, we've now seen him on the pay-per-view in a phenomenal match, and he did this on television. I mean, this is enough to introduce this AEW audience into who this guy is and the next level stuff that he brings and that he's going to bring to this promotion. Like I said, I mean, it's in his theme song, but he's going to elevate everybody else on the roster. And I think, you know, one of the things that I hear from people, you know, watching AEW is that they get these people who get all the way to the top, they hold the championship, and then, man, then they're just by the time they get to the end of their championship run, I mean, they're just kind of being held together by some bandages. I mean, I think of Kenny Omega, I think of MJF, to where these guys are just working so hard that by the time it gets to the end of it, I mean, they're just kind of, they're getting through it. They put on a great match, but then you don't see them for a long time. And now it's building them back up again. And I think with Will Ospreay that you, because he goes so hard in all of these matches, that he's never going to really tone it down. I mean, you can hide him more in a tag match to protect him, but yeah, you need to get him doing more promo stuff and find more interesting things for him to do and get over that character over just having more of these matches, because you want him to be sustainable for a very long time to come.
Yeah.
There's something about Ospreay being so good, so able to do this, that it's weird to say, but it's just setting the bar like too high for the pace of the action. So it, like, his match can feel like a drum solo, like it's just like all this stuff. And it's almost blasphemy, but it was my thought even after his match on Sunday, slow down, sell some more, we say what's important, one of the most important aspects of a match is what's done in between moves. There is no in between moves with him. And so you can't even criticize him not doing the right thing between moves, because he just goes to another move. I want some selling. I want his moves to have time to have an impact and breathe more. And yes, I'm critiquing Will Ospreay's ring style. And I mean, I know it's exhilarating and exciting and world-class, top level, state of the art, but it can be all those things. But it can be dialed down, so those things mean more. And yes, I would curate even some of what Will Ospreay is doing. And I'm with you, Greg, on this, in the sense that I want him to stay healthy. I want his opponent to stay healthy. And I don't want the speed and innovation and all the high-impact moves to dull people's senses. Like, if you just, like, are just – I'm trying to think of an analogy – like just downing, like, M&Ms and gummy bears all day, an apple's not going to taste sweet. But it's healthier, or a banana's not going to be appealing. Like, you're dulling your taste buds when you have that much sensation coming at you in such a compact amount of time. And so I think it can undercut the artistry of what Christian is doing and the storytelling of Danielson. So I'm an advocate for it. I don't think he should keep this pace up. It's dazzling, and he's proven his point. Now slow down, tell stories. Sell a little more, let your opponents have time to sell. But, like, what they do is good, but it is just like drum solo, bang, 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 and not anyone can do it, but it doesn't mean because you can do it, you should do it all the time. I think you should save it, save that kind of thing for the epic match. And I think Sunday was epic enough where it's his first under contract with AEW match, it's against Takeshita. It's just like, I get that that's a showcase for it. It's sort of like I give a pass to Darby doing the glass pane spot because he does crazy stuff. He wanted something during Sting's retirement. But I might have been more critical if it was just on a – well, of course I would have been if it was just on a collision show, you know. So anyway, I think I've addressed that. Craig, your thoughts?
Yeah, and Darby does all kinds of random crazy stuff on regular shows. There was a Rampage match a couple months ago against Jeff Hardy where he's doing these insane moves. I'm like, why are you doing this? But once again, when Ospreay steps in the ring with Brian Danielson, I'm guessing at Dynasty is my guess. Like, that'll be the time to go all out. Like, that's what people are going to be expecting, and that would be the right time to do it. But every single Wednesday and Saturday night, you know, maybe pick and choose there on that end. But I wanted to go back into the conversation.
And I would say before you shift, Greg, I would say even for his next pay-per-view match, slow down a little. Like, I don't like huge moves just being, you know, I called it the Tommy Dreamer comeback because Tommy would, like, take this beating for, like, 12 minutes in ECW. And then there would just be, like, this switch that was hit where if you blinked, and he's suddenly 100%. And it just makes everything that you just invested in, the whole beatdown and all the big moves and the brutality, it just makes you feel like a fool for thinking any of them had any effect because it suddenly just be 100%. Like, sell. Act like it takes a little while to get your power back. Don't just instantly snap your finger and boom, you're at 100% like the bell just rang to start the match. And to me, it's a better match if there's more selling and fewer high spots. So I would even argue, even on the big showcase, slow down, make those moves count more. Give us a chance to soak them up. Joel, do you agree with that, or do you think I'm, you know, how dare you critique? And not, I should say, how dare you, but like, what Ospreay's doing is so special, and so few can do it. Don't rein him in at all, even if you think it tells a better story.
I mean, I think there will be some people who will say that, but I just know from following a lot of Will's career that he is capable of doing a lot of different styles, yeah. And it's not always just the bang, bang, bang. And I feel that, you know, as you mentioned, that this was a special time to do this at the pay-per-view for his first, you know, as an official main roster person, and then also on this show where this was really a reset of Dynamite and wanting to show off this character in front of a larger audience than just the pay-per-view. So I can definitely give it a pass for both of these. I mean, they were great matches. But I think that he is capable of doing these other styles where there is more selling, there is more mat wrestling involved. And I think that for his own longevity, that I think those are things that need to be brought to the forefront. And I think that there's going to have to be cooler heads backstage that are going to have to help him along with that because he's made his name by having these phenomenal matches back to back to back to back where everyone has their best match with Will Ospreay. And I think that there is a level where he can still have these great matches. But, yeah, tone it down a little bit where it doesn't always need to be at this super high level. But I can totally understand why it was for these last two matches. But, again, he can do a lot of different styles, and I do think that there is going to be not the same thing like this every time he goes out.
All right, Greg, sorry for wedging.
No, that's fine. I appreciate the added commentary and the added analysis and adding to the conversation. And maybe Danielson will be good for this because we'll see what kind of match they have. But maybe Danielson will be good for the kind of match that the two of you were talking about here. But on the discussion of the previous conversation with the previous caller, I'm more in agreement with the two of you about because I'm like previous caller. I'm a big Mercedes fan. You know, she's one of my favorite wrestlers, period. And I'm very, very intrigued by her coming in. But we've been talking about this in calls, you know, previous weeks here on the show ever since they announced this Boston show. And you guys are right that there's no one that is close to being on her level in terms of star power, in terms of presentation. And, you know, and two things can be true at the same time. On one hand, there has been a renewed emphasis on trying to feature more women on the programs regularly. But then on the other hand, though, as far as, like, the overall presentation, the women's division compared to the men's division, there's still a major, still a big gap as far as, I mean, look at the pay-per-view. And, you know, we talk about Toni Storm being maybe the closest thing in star power, but in terms of her in-ring work, I feel like the character takes away from her matches. And we saw that again on Sunday against Deonna Purrazzo. The only main card women's match was this 12-minute, probably along with that along with that scramble match, was probably the least memorable thing on the show. And so that's been one thing that, like, you know, this big sign's going to come in. You know, she's the type of person who's going to want to have great matches and really, really be like, you know, she's going to want to try to have the matches that the men are having. And there has not been that emphasis yet in AEW and as far as the women's division goes. Like, this is going to be a major test of things. And so it's going to be very intriguing to see how it plays out, because, like, this is someone who is going to be – has to be treated at the same level as the top male stars. And there's going to have to be this focus on, like, outside of just giving more time to certain people. And you're right, like, having Serena Deeb do potentially cryptic – somewhat subtle promos mentioning she's the final boss on the show that half of the viewership of Dynamite watches every week is not going to be enough to really get a sustained level of interest outside of, like, her hardcore fans and people who are, like, really, really, really into, like, women's wrestling past a certain level. So there's work to be done here, but it's going to be a very interesting test about, like, where Tony Khan sees women's wrestling and what his vision is, because it's pretty clear that he doesn't have, people have talked about it, the same passion for it as he does booking men's wrestling. So, like, this, I mean, it's going to be so intriguing for a lot of reasons.
Well, the paychecks from Mercedes might inspire him.
But we'll also see, though, if this, what you're talking about, like, this resetting of things in general, how it affects what we're seeing here going forward. But it's going to be a very, very interesting test.
Yeah.
Of where things are.
Cool. Anything you want to respond to on that, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to underline that I'm very curious to see how this all plays out with Mercedes. You know, the test of trying to get other people elevated to her level. What's the presentation? How often is she featured on the shows? How often is she wrestling on these shows? I mean, there's not another Bianca Belair. There's not another Becky Lynch. There's not even a Charlotte Flair. There's not people like that. There's a lot of very talented women on the roster, and I think that's maybe where some of the confusion is, that there's a lot of talent there, but just no one is presented or feels like a star near that level. And that is going to be the big challenge. And I think that he's definitely brought on Jennifer Pepperman to help with that. And I know that that was a writer who did a lot of work with Mercedes, but definitely I think that she's going to be tasked with trying to elevate that division and try and create stars there. So it's going to be one of the more interesting stories to follow in the coming months.
Awesome. Greg, anything else you want to close with?
Yeah, and I'll wrap up here, is that I agree with that. The talent is there, and the question becomes, and as you said, Wade, the zeros on the paycheck might influence this. It probably will influence it. The talent is there, but is the vision there? And we'll find out, because there's plenty of talent. And a matter of fact, there's whatever's going to go on now that the founder of Stardom Wrestling, who Tony's had had a beef with, and there was that blew up on social media after he resigned, maybe bringing in Japanese talent to work with and CMLL talent, Stephanie Vaquer, people like that. But then, and the final point I'll make here is that, you know, the talent's there, the vision's there. And honestly, the person I am most intrigued by seeing her work with in AEW is probably Athena. She hasn't been on television in over a year, despite being arguably the best women's wrestler in North America for all of 2023. And as I heard somebody else saying, like, main eventing Ring of Honor shows is not an indicator that you're bullish on the great women's wrestling on your program. So I'll leave it at that.
Great. Good call, Greg. Thanks. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thank you
very much.
Or email me and let me know why not. Take care.
Be specific.
Yes. All right, 347-215-8558. If you call push 1, we might sneak in. 770, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
This me?
Yeah.
Hello?
It's you.
Oh, it's Chris from Atlanta.
Hey, Chris.
Just leaving.
Thanks for
the
calling.
Show.
What's
I don't know if
time?
You had a...
No, no,
I'm
that's
just
great.
Leaving the show. I don't know if you had a on-site correspondent or not.
No, we have not. So I'm glad that you glad you called up.
Awesome.
Thank you. Go ahead. I feel like I stepped on you as you're about to talk about the show.
Oh, I was maybe just saying that connection. The show was a lot of fun. I went to Revolution also, so. It's been a, AEW jam-packed week. And it was a lot of fun tonight. Only about, I'd say about 3,000 people there. Half the Duluth gas out the arena, but they were loud and into it. So you would have never known. Had you closed your eyes and just listened to it, it wouldn't have felt like a half-full arena.
Well, Chris, I got some questions for you. First one is, what was the reaction to Okada turning on Eddie and standing with the Bucks? Was it a crowd that was deflated and disappointed, or shocked and intrigued and angry, or otherwise?
It was probably shocked and intrigued. And it happened, like, out of nowhere. You know, in the section I was in on the floor, most people were trying to tweet out, like, Okada's here. And then it was like, what happened? And you look up and he's standing there with the Bucks, and you didn't even see what happened. So it was, and as somebody that's not a big Young Bucks fan, I'm really intrigued by this, to have Okada as a heel and teaming with them. I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you on that. I like this for reasons that you stated. I'm intrigued by it, and it's, you know, the Bucks are super talented and they seem really engaged right now, and they finally have like distinctive characters other than just living off of ironic meta clubhouse stuff from the indie scene that built their reputation initially along with great pay-per-view matches. Now they're building characters and we're seeing some progress with it, but to have Okada playing off of them, I think there's a chance that there could be real chemistry with this. It also, maybe not. I mean, it's a super small sample size, but I am intrigued with it, and it's interesting the crowd, you know, because the crowd could just been like, ah, this is stupid. We want to cheer Okada, and you've taken away our ability to do that for more than 20 seconds. So, obviously, if 3,000 people attend an AEW show, they're almost all very hardcore fans, ardent fans. They know Okada's, but did you have any sense that there was any segment of the audience that are like, why are people making a big deal out of this guy, and who is this?
Oh, no, it was, like you said, they were hardcore AEW fans that kind of knew who everybody was. And I think, so we have two arenas, we have more than that here in Atlanta. State Farm is a lot bigger, and it's a lot more accessible and easier to get to, which is one of my gripes with AEW going to the Gas South Arena. So I think, honestly, I think they could get more people if they went back to State Farm. But the people that actually made the trek to get to Duluth, Georgia, which is on the other side of Atlanta and kind of out of the way, you really had to want to go there. And I feel like the people that were there wanted to be there, and they knew who Okada was. And they pretty much knew who everybody was. Like, the crowd reactions tonight were really good. And anytime you have good crowd reaction, it just makes the show so much more fun when you're there.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about the reaction Swerve Strickland got compared to other big stars, especially big baby faces on this show during his opening promo.
It was probably between Swerve and Ospreay with who got the biggest reactions coming out from where I was. And having Prince Nana come out, doing his dance at the very beginning, and Swerve coming out, and actually, I love that he's, like, acknowledging that he was kind of a piece of shit, but he's still, like a baby face. I love that. Like, it's so good, and the crowd is with him every step of the way, so he got a really good reaction. The Who's House, Swerve's House, was just like, I don't know if it came through on TV, but it was echoing through the arena for the duration, probably the first 2 minutes of him actually standing in the ring with Shivani. So it was, he had a really good reaction.
Yeah. Joel, I'll throw to you. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to ask something along similar lines, but I just wanted to know, like, or if you're able to rank, like, either the top four or five, like, in order of, you know, the investment into these baby faces. I want to get a better sense as to, you know, moving forward, you know, kind of just based on crowd reaction, you know, what was the response to everybody in kind of a ranked order?
I would go Swerve and Ospreay 1A and 1B. Danielson got a really good reaction, and I know he turned heel tonight, but Okada got probably, you know, second or third highest reaction out there also. And even though he's not a babyface, it's just hard to not to ignore the reaction that he got when he came out.
Well, by the way, I want to I'll interject this and then finish your thought, because, you know, Hook was out there too and stuff. But what they went off the air with just Danielson and circling. So what actually happened with Ospreay and Danielson after the show went off the air? Was there anything more?
So Danielson got in the ring. They faced off. They stood within, like, maybe 5 feet of one another, and then they both got on separate turnbuckles, and Danielson led the yes chant, and then he would quiet everybody down, and Ospreay would put his little W-O in the air, and everybody would start chanting Ospreay, and they went back and forth for, you know, a couple minutes, and then Danielson kind of jumped down off the apron and had everybody cheering for Ospreay as he walked away.
Interesting. Yeah, because that's intriguing. You know, where is Danielson's character? Is he going to align with how the fans feel about him or fight it? And you know, how does this all play into the Callis family and Blackpool Combat Club? And, yeah, some good stuff here in terms of intrigue. So, yeah, so, I mean, there weren't a ton of baby faces on the show, Joel. It's, like, hard to rank 1 through 5 when there were, like, 4 baby faces, like, in terms of there was Hook. Who else? Yeah.
I mean, Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston.
I'm sorry.
Oh, good point, Joel. Yeah, they're now we're up to 5. Go ahead, Chris.
I was saying when he asked the question, I was trying to think, like, going through my head, and I'm like, I don't know how many actual baby faces there were on the show. I was just going by, you know, what happened with the crowd. But I was listening to you all talk about Ospreay and his match style and all that. And I'll say this,
yeah.
I'm more of the Roman Reigns style of a match guy, like the storytelling. But watching that guy wrestle 2 times in the last, like, 4 days, I have no complaints about it at all. Like, it is,
yes, I,
it
I
is
know.
So,
I mean, exactly.
It is so good to see in person him wrestle, and it's just like you think it's over, and it's not over, and it just keeps going, and it keeps getting better, and it's just like, I could imagine, like, on TV, you'd be like, they're not selling anything. But in person, you really don't care. It's just like, I'm in the moment. I'm watching. I'm invested. I don't care anything about Kyle Fletcher, but they made me tonight. You know, it's just like, it's just fun.
Well, Todd Martin on the Revolution post pay-per-view roundtable that we did for VIP members, which we do after every PLA and pay-per-view, when I, like, interjected at the end, great match, he's amazing, but I guess I just like him to sell a little more. There's just too many and Todd's just like, thank you, wet blanket. It just called me out. You know, it's like, I get it. I totally get it. But I still stand by, you know, and like you said, Chris, you're a fan of what Roman Reigns does, and I think I get it. Like, you don't turn, you know, yeah, you don't want to turn down or critique something as special and sort of just, I don't say off the charts. Well, off the charts, good. You know, amazing.
It's off the charts good.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen him in person, Wade? Have you seen him wrestle in person?
I don't think I have. No.
Oh, you
need to change that.
You need to.
You need to change. It is really special to see him wrestle in person, where I think you'd get a very different perception seeing him in person versus just the television product.
Well, but I don't want that to change my well-reasoned opinion with the majority of people at home watching that, you know, for sustainability and not setting the bar too high so everyone else seems lame by comparison. I don't know. It's like if you have, like, American Idol. It's been out the air for years. But, like, if you have, like, a show where, like, here's our our top 8, and they're going to be now one of them is going to be the American Idol, and there's like 7 amazing singers, and then they bring out like Celine Dion or something. It's just like, it's not a show to watch anymore. You know who the best is. Like, she's got to dumb it down a little bit. So I don't know if that's the best example of a singer to use for that analogy, but like, and I'm not saying dumb it down because that's not really what I'm asking for, but if you're so over the top with no selling one spot after another, it does change how fans over time are going to look at other wrestlers doing moves and selling them. And I do worry about that a little bit. As exhilarating as it is to have this, like, just, you know, like I use the term sugar rush booking or sugar rush acquisitions for Tony Khan sometimes. There's a rush from it, but what is the aftermath? What's the hangover? Can anything else feel like it matters when there's that many moves and that little selling, as exhilarating as it is in the moment? And I'm not saying it's not great and fun and people won't pay to see it, but I think it can still be great and fun, but fit a little bit more within the rules of engagement of how matches have traditionally worked in AEW. But I mean, they've had other people do it too. It's not like Ospreay is the only one who's packed in tons of high spots, and WWE does it for big matches. Save it for big matches. Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
You brought up Tony Khan. That guy loves energy drinks, apparently, because my God, he is just a ball of freaking energy, and it's like, you know, I was at our seats were the last row, right by the entrance area, so he was very close to us, and I couldn't keep up with him, and it was just like, I don't know what is going on with you, dude, but my God,
it's not a euphemism, like, or code. When I say this, he just drinks a lot of coffee. And he is really, really, really hyped up by running a wrestling show, especially when it's talent that he loves and a show he's proud of. But he does. He drinks. I mean, I've asked people about that. Like, is coffee a euphemism? Like, no, he just drinks a lot of coffee. And, like, people get mad when people suggest other things are going on. They're like, no, he's a wound-up personality with a ton of natural energy, and he drinks a ton of coffee, and it comes through because he gets really, really – he's a kid on Christmas morning at all these wrestling shows.
Real quick,
it's fun to see him in person.
What I said about – yeah. I said what I said about Tony, but I will say this, like, I'm very happy that he treated Sting the way he did on the way out. Like I said, I went to the Revolution show, and I don't think there could have been a better ending to, you know, I'm a lifelong Sting fan, and I felt like he got the raw deal with WWE and the way things ended with TNA and even WCW, and for him to be treated the way he deserved to be treated by Tony Khan and AEW, like that's a night that, like, I will never forget being there, and that was so much fun and so special. So as much crap as people talk about Tony, I will say that there's one thing he does well, and that's treat the legends correctly.
Yeah, a good point. And that's I think Tony would do it anyway, but it is a way to counter the culture in your brand compared to how WWE was for years. I think Paul Levesque is going to change that, but Vince McMahon, with some bad influences like Kevin Dunn and stuff, certainly took joy in not giving the fans what they wanted when it came to Legends. Chris, how did Jay White get over with his mic work? Because he's really good on the microphone, and he's, you know, been in a just kind of a mid-card comedic clown show type situation for a while. But were the fans into him tonight?
I think tonight was probably the wrong night in Atlanta, where, you know, Sting is very well known here, with WCW being the home here. I think tonight was the wrong night for him to come out and, you know, crap on Sting being gone like 3 days later. So I don't think it went as well as they probably wanted it to. People were just kind of more like indifferent to it. But Darby kind of giving it back to him at the end, telling him, you know, next week me and you are going to fight and I'm going to beat you down or whatever. People were more into that. I've seen Darby a couple of times, and this is the first time that his mic work has got people to cheer for him, as opposed to, like, the crash and burn that he does from bell to bell.
Yeah. Yeah, he's grown up in front of our very eyes. Like, as a person, he talks about his journey, you know, being homeless, and then now here he is years later, handful of years later, just standing in the middle of the ring talking about being part of Sting's retirement match. It's an amazing story. If you ever, you know, I mean, I don't know how much there is to write about it, because he seems like such an open book, you know, in real time. But that was amazing. By the way, speaking of Tony Khan, what did he say about to the crowd? Like, how many times did he talk to the crowd, and anything stand out there?
He came out twice because I stayed for about three quarters of Rampage, so he came out before that. But you know, he said, "This is one of the greatest wrestling cities in the world." We're like, "Come on, dude, we're in Duluth, Georgia. This city sucks."
so we kind of knew market.
Yeah,
one of the great wrestling markets.
But
yeah.
But the crowd did start chanting pay per view. And he said, you know, I'll put that in my book, my mental book or whatever, however he phrased it. And then they started chanting State Farm, which is the arena in Atlanta, which, again, you know, I went to the first show they did in Atlanta, which was Cody versus Wardlow in a cage. And that thing was sold out. Now, I know AEW's cooled off, but I honestly think it is just because getting to Duluth and that Gas South Arena is just such a – from my house, it was an hour and 15 minutes with traffic today, and State Farm would have been 22 minutes away. So it's just like people have to be willing to get off work, and if they're taking their kids, get their kids out of school and put up with all that Atlanta traffic that you normally don't want to. So honestly, could they sell it out again? Probably not, but they could probably get 8,000 to 10,000 people in there for a pay-per-view. I think Atlanta's kind of a good market for WWE. Does really well when they come here and go to State Farm. So, but he did say that he would basically think about it. And then he just kind of hyped us up for what was to come later. And, you know, we're going to see some of the best wrestlers in the world. The AEW Revolution pay-per-view was the greatest pay-per-view ever, you know, normal Tony Khan stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like last time they were in that market, they did 5,300 for the Dynamite in August. Was that this building or State Farm?
That was,
you know, Chris?
That was this building, because I was there also. That was this building.
Yeah, so they're down
almost
2,000 people. Well, so the reason I asked that is Tony Khan should have said to the crowd, if you want a pay-per-view, you got to bring two of your friends with you next time and have them as paid customers. We got to turn 3,300 into 9,900. If you want a pay-per-view, you know, you got to, I mean, yes, it's a drive and it's not the A arena, but we can't have a big drop in attendance and then expect us to bring a pay-per-view. Although sometimes pay-per-views can wake up a market. It's like, hey, this is a home market. You're treating us well. I don't know the stats on that, but certainly if you feel like you're being prioritized and you get excited about being the home of a big event, it might help attendance going forward. But it's tough to make that argument if you're in a crowd of 3,300 with all the markets out there that might do better.
Right.
What else do you want to share with us? Yeah.
You asked about the crowd and stuff like that. There was, I noticed three people that I saw at Revolution were at the show tonight. So as far as like diehard AEW people, they were definitely there tonight, including one guy that sat the row in front of us at Revolution was actually sitting the row in front of us tonight. So that was kind of funny, but. Yeah, it was definitely diehard AEW people in there tonight. And, you know, with Collision being there tomorrow night, which Tony asked, you know, how many people are going to be there tomorrow, a good bit of the people that were there did cheer and say they were going to be there, which I won't. Like, I'm kind of AEW'd out for the week, but I'm also kind of disappointed that Collision is going to be recorded on a Thursday instead of live on a Saturday, because since they've announced Collision, like, I've been kind of waiting for a Saturday night show here to kind of make an event out of, and I think a Saturday TV show here in Atlanta might actually boost attendance there as well, because, you know, it's a Saturday night, nobody's got to go to work the next day, nobody's got to go to school, but they're recording it tomorrow night for whatever reason, so it'll probably be about the same amount of people in the arena.
The good part is it means more stars, because, you know, he can keep everybody around an extra night and doesn't have to pay, you know. So, you know, we talked about that on a recent podcast, the trade-off of doing Thursday pre-taped events. You lose, you know, the benefits of Saturday night that you listed and the aspect of it being live, especially in the internet era, social media era, where word gets out about, you know, you can't really have big surprises and major news unless it's, you know, part of post-production and a pre-tape that isn't in front of an audience. So... But if you tape on Thursday, that means everyone who's on Dynamite, you know, you can keep around for an extra night and load the show up. And this is a, you know, it's a pretty loaded lineup for Collision. So I guess I'd rather have a loaded lineup of Collision with stars and big matches than a stripped down roster and it just happens to be live. But I'm not talking about attending in person, just from a show quality, you know, standpoint. But there's something to be said for being live. So maybe it, you know, if I don't know where Tony's head is at in terms of, you know, how he feels about this, and if it's something, you know, logistically he just feels like, ah, I had to do it, but I don't want to, or he's like, this is intriguing, maybe we'll do more of it. But even just, you know, mixing it up a little bit. Joel, what do you think about that? The pros and cons of the, you know, the practicality of having a loaded lineup of taping on Thursday versus a less loaded lineup, but actually being live.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some pros and cons to that, but I would probably side on just doing something, you know, a Thursday or so where you can have more of the stars there, where I think as many people as you can have available for that show to really build that up and not just have, you know, like we see on a lot of Collisions that there's, you know, a lot of squash matches or people that you don't typically see on Dynamite who are not at the same star level, that I think just more of the stars and the more importance that you can bring to Collision is going to bring more viewers to it, you know, because it's hard to say, like, what the difference would be in terms of viewership versus pre-tape versus live. It's hard to tell just on the one-off weeks when they do that, but I think that there's a lot of other benefits just by being able to have people available. Like tomorrow they're going to have the debut of the Elite, and so if you went to the arena tonight, like you did, Chris, that you got to see the debut of Kazuchika Okada and the new stuff that he's doing with the Young Bucks, and then you can come back tomorrow to see really a little bit more of the development and see them actually in a match, you know? So I think that you know, when you can do things like that and have a quick turnaround follow-up with those same people, you know, could be a benefit.
Yeah. Chris, how did the women's match hold the audience's attention relative to everything else on the show? I mean, they had 10 minutes. It was, you know, a novel match and, you know, moves, counter moves. Riho is, you know, really distinct in what she does. It seemed like it would be a match that would hold the crowd's attention more, even if it's in that sort of that spot that the women's match gets put on Dynamite, you know, middle of the second hour. How'd it come across in person?
So where we were sitting, you know, everybody's kind of talking to one another. Statlander comes out and then Riho comes out. And we didn't know what the match was going to be, so we all assumed that Statlander and Riho were teaming for whatever reason, and they'd be taking on the House of Black. And then when it was revealed that it was Riho versus Statlander, it was kind of like, why are we getting Riho in a random, you know? And it was the only women's wrestling match. And I'm a big women's wrestling fan, so I was kind of disappointed that that was the match we were getting. I was entertained by the match. I'm not that big of a fan of Riho, but Statlander kind of playing the role of the powerhouse was really good. The crowd at one point was chanting, "This is awesome," which I disagreed with big time, but they were into it. The crowd was into it. It was a very easy crowd tonight, though, so it's like, can you really gauge what it was when they were cheering for everything? Because when you're cheering for Riho coming out, and I'm not trying to be mean, but, like, you're just cheering for everything now. You're just happy that wrestlers are there.
Yeah, yeah. Hook and Brian Cage, talk about the crowd engagement for that one.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. I have a really good video. When Brian Cage ripped the guardrail down, that guardrail was literally right behind our seats. And so I'm recording him walking by us, and then he grabs both of the guardrails, and I'm just like, hey, you can have it. And the crowd engagement for that was really good. I mean, you had the Brian Cage going through the guardrail. You had the guardrail placed in the ring, the fire extinguisher. Like, there was a lot of bells, the thumbtack. There was a lot of bells and whistles for this one, and the crowd was just eating it up. And, you know, we don't really get a lot of quote-unquote hardcore matches when companies come here. So to see thumbtacks in person, that was a little different. I don't know if it was warranted for just a random episode of Dynamite, but
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. They pulled them out. You might as well use it.
Yeah. anything else you want to share with us about your experience tonight? Anything off camera or any observations or anything else, Chris?
The merch stands with AEW, like, something really has to be. I just don't understand the business model for it. For example, for Revolution, the doors opened at 6 o'clock, and we probably didn't get in until about 6:30 because the lines were so long. Once we got in, there was 2 merch stands for, I think, 16,000 people, and the lines were literally wrapping around the concourse area. So it's like, okay, well, we'll just wait because we're going to end up missing the show. And by the time the lines died down enough, there was literally no merch there that said anything like, I saw Sting's last match there. I was at Revolution. And then today, there was 1 merch stand. Now, there's only 3,000 people there. But the merch that they did have just wasn't good. And I don't know if you guys have looked on AEW Shop, which is, you know, partnering with Pro Wrestling Tees, but you basically got to pay like over $50 to get a shirt shipped to you from there after taxes and fees and shipping and all that. And it's just like, so when you go to an event, you kind of want to get the merch that you want, and they, you know, they really don't have anything. They had a blue AEW shirt that I'd never seen before, a regular AEW shirt. They had a Darby Allin t-shirt, just trying to think off the top of my head. And
did they have any stuff with the new logo there, Chris? Was it all the old logo stuff? Because I know I saw something that they were going to do like a 50% off sale of all the old logo stuff.
Well, I can tell you that
on pro wrestling,
not 50% off. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at the stadium, it was not 50% off, and it was all the old logo. And then they had, you know, action figures and belts and stuff like that. But it just seems like such a missed opportunity to not have merch of your most popular people there. That, you know, they did have a Will Ospreay shirt, bro. But, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not wearing that. you know, I'd rather wear a shirt that just says Will Ospreay on it. I'm not wearing Bruv around, you know, downtown Atlanta. Like, nobody's going to know what the hell that means.
They'll be like, Bruv, what?
I love it.
Exactly. But the merch thing is a big deal, but AEW, I've said this before, they put on just a really good show. It's fast paced. It doesn't seem like it's, and I haven't been to a WWE show in about a year, but it doesn't seem as slowed down for national TV as WWE does. They keep you engaged throughout the entire time. So I will say that AEW is a lot of fun to go to. So anytime they're in your town, I would go to them. You know, if I didn't go to 2 shows already this week, I'd probably go to Collision tomorrow. And hearing that Okada was going to wrestle tomorrow, I thought about it, but it's a lot. yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate it. Give us a call back.
No problem. You guys have a good night. Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. If you want to be an on-site correspondent like Chris just was, drop me a line at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com with the name of the city and the date in the subject line, and then we can anticipate your call and arrange for it. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Speaking of which, let's shift to some emails here and begin. That's a little more generic. We'll save that. Zach in Texas says, gentlemen, I thoroughly enjoyed this show. Swerve is firmly set up as the top babyface and likely next AEW champion. Okada is All Elite and linked with the Bucks. In one segment, they set up a match between him and Eddie, and now him and Kenny. Hopefully at All In if Kenny is healthy by then. Ospreay and Fletcher had an absolute banger in the main event. You could definitely see Ospreay's giant bruise on his back. there was a funny moment in the roundtable on that one that Zach referenced. And he still put on an all-time TV main event. WWE just can't offer that on weekly TV. Ospreay, Danielson, Okada, the 3 best wrestlers in the world, 4 if you count Kenny, are under the AEW banner. It's almost unfair. Throw in Mercedes next week, and there's no reason AEW shouldn't be on absolute fire the rest of the year. Well, you're right, and you're so wrong, Zach. The problem with AEW, Joel, has not been a lack of talent. It's been getting the most out of that talent to expand beyond the 3,000 and change who attended in Atlanta tonight and knew who Okada was and loved him. It's so you can't get intoxicated and infatuated if you're Tony Khan with these amazing names that I can't believe I signed a contract and I get to, you know, they're my action figures and I'm living out my, you know, this ever kid's dream. But in real life, you got to put in the work to maximize their value and get the most out of them. And that's the frustration. Like multiple main eventers I hear, you know, directly from or from others who are around them, you know, are frustrated with their push or the push of their friends and others. And so, you know, there's no reason AEW shouldn't be absolutely on fire the rest of the year. Yes, there is a reason. If Tony Khan doesn't continue to put the kind of booking effort and end product he did tonight. And we've seen it, Joel. And I'm not trying to be a wet blanket on this. I just want to keep the feet to the fire. Like, whatever work went into this show, if it's sustainable, do it every week. You're not always going to have Okada debut. You're not always going to have Ospreay coming out of a pay-per-view in a main event like this. I understand not every Dynamite is going to be have, you know, this much happening. That'd be crazy. But there should be, even on average lineups and weeks when there's not a big debut and big angles coming out of a hot pay-per-view, you still want that feeling, that granular attention to detail and thoroughness and thought went into everything. And then with this talent, there's no reason AEW shouldn't be on fire the rest of the year. I'm optimistic. I've been increasingly optimistic about the prospects. I think it's come through in my discussions with like Rich Fan on everything. We're like booking out or Zach Hadorn. We're talking about the rest of – and Jason Pollock. I mean, I'm thinking of all these different conversations and Todd Martin, of course. Like the pieces are in place. This could be a really special year for AEW if everyone stays healthy. And, you know, Sunday and Wednesday should give people more reason for optimism that they are equipped to take advantage of this potential – they currently have and that people are excited about, but understandably a little nervous about. It's like voter turnout. You know, you need, if you're a politician, you're like, I think we can win, but we need voter turnout. They need to be a motivated group of people voting to actually go to the polls and then we'll win. And that's how I feel about AEW. Like the potential is there. They just need to turn out every week. Joel.
Yeah. I mean, it's never been for a lack of talent. I mean, they've always had a bunch of great wrestlers on their roster. Even when people have been injured, they still have great talent, but it is, you know, having communication with the wrestlers and giving them an idea of what the direction is, because you want everybody to feel like they are on some sort of journey, whether that journey is all the way to the top or it's wherever they land on the card. You know, that everybody needs to feel like that there is a place that they're going. There's a direction for it. You can't just, as you mentioned before, and we've learned now with AEW, you can't just present great matches. You know, that is not going to be enough. There's so much great wrestling matches out there that it's really not going to stand out from other things that are out there, unless it's truly, truly exceptional stuff out there that people seek out. But then again, that's just kind of the one and done, that you check in on it and then you're done. What's going to keep people checking in every week is those compelling storylines. You know, Todd Martin talks about that a lot with AEW, is just having those compelling storylines that keep people engaged. And you see that with WWE, you know, is the obvious comparison with the stuff that they've done with the Bloodline, but especially Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre definitely has this story that people are intrigued. There's been a lot of character development. There's a lot of depth with him, to where when he grabs a microphone, you're interested in what he's going to say. Is he going to say something about CM Punk? Is he going to be saying something about Seth Rollins? You know, how is he going to twist these things? I mean, he's just becomes a very compelling person when he grabs the microphone. It's not all just playing to the crowd. And that's where people, like including myself, became very critical of MJF, because a lot of it was just playing to the crowd. Or Chris Jericho, I've been very critical of him at times, of just trying to get things over with people and just trying to get a big pop and make a t-shirt, get something trending on Twitter. And that is not, I think we know now in 2024, that's not the recipe for growing your company, where AEW feels right now that they have so much momentum. I mean, right now, you know, on March 6th, it feels to me they have as much momentum right now as they had, you know, in the fall of 2021, when they signed CM Punk and they brought in Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole. And this is a very significant moment for this company. And I think that if they can really rein things in, where I feel that Tony has hired some good people, if he is listening to these criticisms, people talk about the merchandise stands and other things like that, that do matter for the experience of going there and spreading the brand and creating other revenue. All that stuff really matters. But if you can just focus in on giving people a direction, creating compelling characters and storylines, just like they did tonight, and they did an exceptional job of doing that with several characters. You know, continue to do that, and that's a very, very sustainable way to grow your wrestling business in 2024.
Speaking of Adam Cole, Charlie from Evanston says, "Hi, Wade and Joel, after watching tonight's show, who would you push and who would you cool off? Personally, I'm worried about Adam Cole ever reaching the potential some saw for him years ago, and even last fall before his injury. Will Ospreay now fully committed to AEW? I worry Cole and others may have missed their window to be the centerpiece champion. By the way, VIP has never been as strong as it is in 2024, something to listen to every day. Thank you, Charlie. Listeners who aren't VIP, take his advice. Sign up, pwtorch.com/govip. I thought Adam Cole had a good night on the microphone. I mean, it got lost in the, you know, lost in the mix of a lot of other things happening. But, you know, he needs to step up. He did some really bad goofball, demeaning.
He's damaged.
Comedy.
I mean,
he's
damaged.
Yeah. I mean, but I thought he was, you know, showed signs tonight of. I mean, he looks, you know, I mean, Swerve's making, but he's in a wheelchair. He's playing a manager role, you know, but. I don't know. I mean, I'm not ready to write him off yet, but I agree he's damaged. Joel, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not quite ready to write him off, but the problem is that the longer he's been injured multiple times, and he has missed a tremendous amount of time where he should have been building a lot of momentum when he debuted. And that's been a lot of start and stop, and there's other people who have now come into the company who are going to be ahead of him. And it's going to be very much an uphill climb to where I'm not writing him off completely, but as far as a centerpiece world title guy, it's difficult to imagine that at this point. It's very difficult to see him there because there's just so many other people in line to take that position.
All right, we'll go to JB in Detroit. Swerve was mega over with the crowd tonight, and I can honestly say that tonight's crowd in Atlanta is one of the hottest AEW TV crowds I can remember in a long time. Tony Khan is a strike while iron is hot with Swerve. I think that means getting the title on him at next month's new Dynasty pay-per-view. Did you come out of tonight's show, Joel, and really Sunday's event, seeing him in person in pay-per-view, thinking, yeah, Swerve's the guy, and tonight was a good setup for it. You get the Wardlow match out of the way with Joe. You give him a one-on-one match with Joe, and you have him win, and you send a signal to the AEW fan base. Yeah, we got Ospreay, we got Okada, Kenny coming back at some point, Danielson, Moxley, whatever. Hangman's attracted for now. But we're not going to let Swerve get forgotten about and pushed down the card. And, in fact, we believe in him. I thought tonight's promo was really good by Swerve, by the way. But, yeah, what do you think? What do you think of what JB said?
I thought he was excellent on the microphone tonight. Again, establishing almost like Cody Rhodes-esque of like he's going to keep coming for Samoa Joe. He's going to keep going after this. Almost like the message to the audience of don't give up on this. Don't think that this is over. That he's going to fall down the card. That eventually we're going to get to what the fans want with this. However, to see, you know, last Sunday, it just felt like, no, this isn't the right time for him to win the championship. There was so much else going on in the pay-per-view. It would have gotten lost in the shuffle with everything happening there. But, I mean, I still feel that you can have somebody getting hot and have somebody moving up the card, but is it always the right time for them to become the world champion? And with Swerve, I don't know yet. You know, I know that may sound crazy to say that there's a lot of people who are probably screaming, listening to this, saying that, you know, man, he's the guy. He's so over right now. But I don't know. I mean, Samoa Joe, every time I keep seeing him, it's like, I thought maybe he's a transitional champion when he won this at World's End and kind of let's see how this goes with MJF being injured. But the more I see this, I'm like, you can really build something with this to keep this going along to where if you want to have Ospreay win this at All In, let's even say against Samoa Joe, I mean, that could be a really, really big moment. Whereas do you want to have Swerve win it and hold it for, you know, a couple months maybe and then drop it to somebody else and then Ospreay wins it? Because I'm very much set on the fact that it would be a mistake from Tony Khan to not have Will Ospreay win the championship at All In. I mean, it would be a mistake at this point to not do that unless there is a significant injury to Ospreay, but let's just assume that that's not going to happen and hope it's not going to happen. But if he's at the same rate, who knows, with all those things. But I'm just not sold that it's that right now with the people coming into the promotion that this is the right time to do that with Swerve. I think that you can have a keep him at a top level, have him getting significant wins over big names, someone like a Bryan Danielson, you know, that he could feud with and get a big win over him. There's other people too that he could beat and not make him champion yet. And I think that you can save that for down the road.
I do too. I agree with everything you said, and yet I feel nervous about, it's not exactly Cody Roman, you know, like, oh, you know, don't, you know, people are all worried last year. That was your window to do it and all that. But you just signed Will Ospreay. You're going to the UK. He should win the title there, and it should be over Samoa Joe as a heel. To me, that's a better match. They could do Hot Potato and have Swerve win, and then Okada wins it, and then you do Okada Ospreay, and that's where Ospreay wins
the title.
I'm not against rapid fire title changes if they serve a purpose and just keep fans on guard that when someone wins a world title, they might lose it a month or two later. And that person wins it, they might lose it a month or two later. But then after that, do a 2-year reign. You know, like, I don't mind the rhythm being different over time. I don't think every reign needs to be long. Mm-hmm. That said, I don't know that you want to do that many title switches because it won't make Swerve's win mean as much if he wins it and then loses it quickly and then he's out of the title picture for a year. I think a key line in his promo tonight, and I put quote marks around it. All right, no, I didn't. I take that back. But he said he vowed to win championships, including the AEW world title. So I think that jumped out to me. Is what he's saying is, I eventually am vowing to win the AEW world title, but I'm not only vowing to win the AEW title. So maybe they're going to give him something else to work with.
A new belt?
Oh, that'd be great. but maybe if, you know, I mean, he could beat Roderick Strong or who pointed at the Continental Classic? Okada. So,
yeah,
I'm just, he's not going to beat Okada. I know, he could beat Okada. I mean, if you're looking at elevating Swerve, I guess Okada could win Continental Crown. And then Swerve beats Okada at Wembley? For that title? Is that a good, quote, consolation prize?
No, I don't like it, no.
And why not?
I mean, I just don't think that, you know, I don't want Okada winning these lower championships. I mean, I just don't want to see him.
Well, he's single for it tonight.
I don't think that's the right move. I mean, I could see a scenario here where you could have Swerve win the champ, like you said, if you have different rhythm, which I agree with. I like that philosophy with the world championship and not always just, okay, so now they're going to hold it for the next, 9 months until that person gets injured and then they have to give it up and they're just bandaged together to get through
right.
it, you know?
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, I really don't want to see that anymore. I just find a way to get around that. But I definitely could even see a scenario. If they wanted to give it to Swerve, world championship, and then, and then maybe Danielson then comes in and swoops in and then wins the championship, and then you can do Danielson Ospreay at All In because you do want to make that a big match. And certainly I think that this is setting the stage for Kenny Omega to come back at some point and do the Omega-Okada match probably at All In. I mean, that seems to be with him with Omega being fired from the Elite, that they're going to be heading that direction at one point or another. And it certainly seems that you want to save that for the biggest impact to do that Wembley Stadium. So,
he can win it at All Out days later then.
I mean, it's such a bummer to me because I've always done the Labor Day going to Chicago, and it just seems like that's such a lesser show now for Chicago. I just wish the timing was a little bit different for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd like Labor Day to be a holiday again. Like, just let us have a 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
I know it's an escape for people, but like people who travel and stuff, it's like, oh God, I was going to spend that with, you know, Memorial Day and Labor Day are big weekends for a lot of people for travel and barbecues and stuff. And now it's like, oh no, I got to watch wrestling and everyone's mad at you because you're not around. So,
well, it's a big cabin weekend, you know, for us in Minnesota. I mean, it's the big cabin weekend. And certainly I have family who wants to do that. And I'm just like, but I got to go to this show, you know, and it's difficult with the timing, but you know, back to the original point on this, I mean, I think that there's a lot of different scenarios here, but I I may be in the minority on this, but I just don't think right now it's Swerve's time to take that championship.
All right, JB has 9 points, so we'll be quicker, rapid fire here to wrap up the show on the rest of his the last 8 of his 9 points. But he says, I really like the aesthetic change tonight with the new stage and graphics, along with the opening music change. The graphics showing the wrestlers with matches coming up really popped for me, and easier to remember because of it. I think they always did that. I wish they didn't debut the LED ringside boards until tonight. It just would have had more impact.
Yeah.
They had them, and they're like, oh, let's use them. Just save it all at once. But, yeah, I mean, it didn't jump out to me as, like, a reinvention of how wrestling is presented in any way. But it's nice. I think you need to do refreshes of your entrance set and your logo and the color scheme even. Raw and SmackDown are changing their color scheme. But I liked it. I think it's cool. And, yeah, I like the font for Dynamite.
I like the logo. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the logo. It's different. It's not just kind of the stamped font like they did, you know, and the new logo is just a little bit more sleek, you know, and in time people will become more nostalgic for the old AEW logo. I don't think it's really losing or changing all that much, but, you know, it's just updating that. The colors, are fine. Yeah, it is like NXT 2.0, but I think this is more tastefully done other than just kind of the splashes of the colors. The new theme that they had, that didn't stand out to me a whole lot. Yeah. Just the whole new song that they had. I mean, maybe with time. I mean, that's not totally what I'm looking for. I mean, when I was watching Revolution and just seeing that Seek and Destroy, I mean, man, if you're paying all that money for Elton John to have their Saturday Nights for Fighting, I mean, how much would it be to get Metallica's Seek and Destroy? Right. I mean, that would be an incredible opening song for your wrestling show. I'm assuming that would be a gigantic amount of money, but wow, that would be a way to get people pumped up.
Yeah. I think the FTW title, quote, not being recognized by any wrestling body is a stupid concept when it's literally defended on AEW television. With that stipulation out of the way, I really like the sustained push that Hook is finally getting. He's been a regular focus of TV for a few months now, and it's doing wonders. Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, it feels like they feel like Hook is ready now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Hook still, you know, he's not at the same level as a lot of these other. I mean, on a show that where you're seeing Will Ospreay in the main event, you know, I mean, yeah, it's hard to compare to that. But Hook is still not at the same level as everybody else, but he's improving. You know, he's certainly improving.
Yeah. Number four, I find it hilarious that the Bucks are now entering the ring as EVPs on the old Cody Vader.
Yes,
the
love raised that.
Elevator. Oh, it's so good. They're just trolling.
That was great.
I also think it was really a smart move to portray losing to Sting in his retirement match as ending his career. That's so hilarious. It's also funny that the Bucks made the logical move of suspending Hangman only to instantly get their heat back with a ridiculously unfair decision to fire Kenny from the Elite. Speaking of, Kenny being fired from the Elite is a perfect setup for a match between him and Okada upon his eventual return. So we covered all that. I think that the idea is to position Ospreay as one of the company's biggest babyfaces sooner rather than later, then it's not a bad idea to position Okada as a top heel to lead the Elite with Hangman and Kenny dispelled from the faction. This also helps keep the Bucks' new heel persona fresh, relevant, and feeling big as we move past Sting's final match. I agree with all that. I think those are good additional points in support of this, and I think Okada's going to have fun with it, and I think he's going to be good in this role, playing off of the Bucks. I need more evidence to be certain of that, but I'm optimistic about it, and it does set up more matches. It doesn't create that glut.
The more that we're sitting here talking about this and thinking about the scenario, I mean, the more I'm just falling in love with the way that they did this with Okada, because it is something fresh and new, because that's the reason why he left Japan is that there was as much, I mean, besides money, is that he did everything that was possible there, you know, in New Japan. It's like, what else was there for him to do?
Right.
You know, go against these other people. The way he was positioned was just, he was the top guy, and he's not going to be taking these losses. And so for him to do similar but different character, where he's still going to be the rainmaker, but now he's, you know, he quote unquote sold out and went to America, and now he's hanging out with the EVPs. I mean, this is just a really interesting story to watch outside of just, wow, he's going to have these great matches on these pay-per-views that I need to watch. You know, just the character development and what he's doing is probably really inspiring for him to, you know, feel reinvigorated versus just kind of doing, you know, a lot of these kind of similar matches that he was doing in Japan after a while. And the Young Bucks, I mean, just as these guys who helped start this company and had kind of, you know, sometimes they'd fall by the wayside, then they'd come back, they'd have this great match on pay-per-view, then you wouldn't see them for a while. And now just to have them, like, in a sustainable character with a storyline that you can really buy into, and then you can imagine these matches that can happen down the line. I mean, this is, like I mentioned before, this is the stuff of, like, AEW that – I mean, I was really interested in the beginning of just being able to envision these matches happening down the road, and not just as like, wow, wouldn't this be a great dream match one-off? But instead, like, because the story is leading you to these things that you can just really get excited for. And so that's why I was very optimistic about this. The last episode I recorded with Greg for the Conversation Club, I just said, you know, I'm very bullish on what they're doing right now. And if they actually execute this with positioning these people, with Okada coming in, if you position Will Ospreay as a top star, you keep the Young Bucks, you know, in the position that they're at. Some of these other younger talents I mentioned of Takeshita, Powerhouse Hobbs, Kyle Fletcher. I mean, I'm just very, very excited about where things are headed.
He says, why is Tony Schiavone agreeing with Taz that Statlander should have used a chain to cheat against Riho? On a side note, I feel like Riho is able to get the crowd to invest in any of her matches, regardless of how uninterested or cold that might seem going into the match. People complain about her size, but her in-ring wrestling psychology is masterful. Yes, Tony Schiavone makes some head-scratching comments sometimes where it just seems like he's on autopilot and he should be pushing back, not agreeing. Riho, Joel. What do you think about his framing of what she's able to do with her work?
I mean, yeah, every time she comes in, she gets over, but I want to see her here for an extended period of time. You know, I don't want to just see kind of the one-off and then she has the pay-per-view match and then disappears. I want to see them really get behind her and start developing her character more.
He also says, I feel as though Kyle Fletcher is a version. that's not something that's your business. I feel as though Kyle Fletcher is a version of Will Ospreay from 5 years ago. What a showcase main event for both Will and Kyle. I know the criticism of Ospreay matches and that it's kick out of finisher after kick out of finisher. But I think he can be an exception to the general rule in that regard. For some reason, it just works for him better than it does for anyone on AEW's roster, in my opinion. That is a understandable counter argument, which is let him do it. Let him do his thing and don't worry about it. I'm more worried than probably most people, but I stand by it. But nevertheless, yeah, Kyle Fletcher, I'm a fan of. He should be on a, you know, three-year course where they just really think about everything they're doing with him. Like, you know, I don't know, like Solo Sikoa at one point felt like in WWE, they were like, okay, he's going to be a big thing for us. And I still think they are storyline wise, even though they've had him do some jobs on TV. Like you could tell with Solo, they're like, okay, they're at least planning for him to be a big deal at some point in the dynamic with the Bloodline. And you just protect pitchers. I mean, you can't lose. You got to be a brave booker and book clean losses, but you want more than just lip service at the end by the announcers going, he was double tough or he brought it tonight or the always capable or whatever, you know, whatever the euphemisms are right before someone loses or right after they lose. Don't do that. But like talk about him as a really big, kind of the Austin Theory treatment that he got, you know, a year and a half ago or whatever his timeline, you know, signal to the fans. This guy we believe in. It's sort of a meta sense. He's important because I think there is a lot there to work with. Do you think that's too optimistic or you need to see more, or are you on board with that?
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I mean, I really love the way that they ended this match of Kyle Fletcher. You know, he's like, come on, bring it. Where he knows that, you know, this guy, Will Ospreay, I gave it a good fight, but he's just better tonight, you know, and then just I'm going to take this hidden blade, or as they said, not so hidden blade, and just take the loss, where I think the story you can tell with him is, man, Kyle Fletcher, he is kind of a protege of Will Ospreay, and he, man, is he really good, and he showed a good fight, but right now he's not at that same level. But this guy's going to keep working, he's going to keep getting better, and one day he may beat Will Ospreay, you know, yep. and tell that story to where when and if that does happen, I mean, that would be a really big moment for Kyle Fletcher if you can continue on with that.
He says, Brian Danielson heard Wade and is stepping up to actually do something for the betterment of the company, and that is put over Will Ospreay. But we'll see. I don't. Where do you think? I don't know. There's a lot of things that tonight could be signaling.
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that they didn't get right in each other's faces, you know, that they kept a distance, as Chris was saying when he was there, you know, after the show, is that they kept a distance from each other, then they both went up on the turnbuckles. So I don't know if this is something that they're going to right away. I would have hoped that they'd maybe give it a little bit more time to breathe before they went to Danielson and Ospreay. But, you know, I'm curious to know where this goes, because Danielson's character has been all over the place, you know, where he's sometimes he's a heel, and then he gets cheered, and, you know, some of his promos where, I mean, like, I was even at a live show where he's playing heel, and then he laughs about it, and then goes back into babyface, where, you know, he has the latitude to do what he wants. At this point, because this is his, you know, his last full-time year. Whereas I just would like to see more consistency with him and less of just kind of like bang, bang, bang. I want to face these people, have these novelty matches, and just kind of tell more of a better story. That's very consistent and has more of an arc with his character.
He's been a basketball player who's just dribbling a lot and trying to find a way to just go, you know, slam dunk the ball instead of passing it around and also playing defense. Like he wants to just do his, I don't know, that's not the best analogy, but it's like he's doing his own thing for himself at the expense, I think, of the betterment of the company. And it's dazzling to watch a talented player go into business for himself, ignore his teammates and do dazzling things, but it can lead to turnovers and stagnant offense. And I feel like Danielson's like, but I came to AEW and didn't stay in WWE because I wanted to do this stuff, and that was part of the deal. Okay, that's fine, but I'm not going to not criticize you for it. I mean, I'm still going to say, it is what it is. You're not helping the company by going, I really want to. And the Judah game, I think, fit with Kingston. I mean, it's not like it's absurd what he's doing, but come on. The clock is ticking. Contribute and don't say I enjoy being a heel more. So with a tongue in cheek and a little wink to the audience, I'm going to cosplay being a wrestling heel because it's more fun for me. That's just BS.
Right.
Like, you know, invest. Fans want you to be a baby face. I know it's not as fun, but come on. It's so counterproductive for everything else. All right. I'm repeating my recent rants. Finally, he says, how will Mercedes Moné debut next week? Will it be after or during a match? Women's one, presumably. Will she get her own segment? Will it start the show like CM Punk, or will it end the show after the main event? As always, I love the show, and everyone go VIP. Thank you, JB. I think she gets her own segment. I just think you...
For sure.
Shivani just goes, you know, we're in Boston, big business. We've got another new signing. It's wrestling's worst-kept secret, but if you didn't hear about it, don't feel bad. Good for you for... you know, enjoying sunshine and being on, not on your phone. I don't know, whatever. You know, like, and then she comes out and she issues a mission statement. It's not the only thing that can work, but I think that's what they'll do. And I think it's a safe and, you know, tried and true approach.
100% agree. I mean, we've seen a lot of people just debuting and coming back here in a lot of different ways. And I think just kind of the very simple Tony Schiavone is out there and has a big announcement to introduce somebody. And then you spend a lot of time with her entrance and the crowd reaction. And then her coming to the ring and, you know, cutting a promo. I mean, I don't know if it's even the right time to have somebody else come in and get in her face or something like that. You know, to set up another match again, then that goes back to who would that be? And I don't have a good answer for you right now, to where that would feel like an epic moment, where I think it really should just be about Mercedes going out there and cutting a promo and just soaking in the crowd reaction that I assume is going to be very big for her.
How big do you think she's going to be?
It's not going to be CM Punk. You know, because we've seen her, she's been on AEW television sitting in the crowd at All In. You know, it's like Okada too, where it's like you have seen him before. It's not this massive, huge crossover where she's done some stuff in New Japan. But, you know, I think it's going to be a big deal to a lot of people to finally have, to have a woman come in here who people view as a very, top level. I mean, she's been in the Mandalorian TV show. I mean, she's done some mainstream stuff to where I think it is going to be a big deal to see her coming into AEW. And then You know, I think that the debut is going to be great. It's going to be fine. It's going to have the it's going to have the crowd reaction that they're looking for. She's going to have that moment, but it's all the conversations we're having is that, you know, then who's next? Who then does she face? Because then it's got to be about building the matches and continuing to build her stardom. It's going to be diminishing returns after the first time that she has that big pop. It's going to be, what is the direction of this character moving forward? And there is a lot of uncertainty around that.
All right, Joel, thank you. We'll wrap up on that note, but you've got a lot more to talk about on your show coming up later this week.
Absolutely. Like, Wade, I said this was an absolute treat. I mean, this was a more the really fun shows that we've done together to talk about a really great episode of Dynamite that I will certainly remember, especially if they can keep this momentum moving forward. But definitely I'll be talking a lot more about Revolution and going a little bit more in depth about the show and then the other things that are coming up for AEW. And I'll be recording that with Greg Canner this coming Friday morning.
Excellent. Search PW Torch on your podcast app. Thanks, everybody. Spread the word. Let people know about our show if you enjoy it. And go VIP. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Joel, thanks a lot. I look forward to walking my dog with my with the podcast playing on my AirPods. So coming up in a couple days here. Look forward to what you and Greg have to say and hearing more about your experience at the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that show with Greg. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. In fact, on the flagship tomorrow with Todd Martin, and then Friday, Kelly Wells will be guest hosting for me, hosting the SmackDown post show.